WGN, it's Let's Get Legal. We're powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. And the rest of the show is going to be about workers' compensation. Trust me, it's an interesting topic. I know a lot. Hey, most of us are working. Things happen at work. And oftentimes you don't know where you're supposed to go for that. And it can be a complicated process if you get hurt. Sometimes you don't even quite know how you got hurt or if the company's going to have to pay for it or how that works. Or is it even the company that pays for it? Anyways, you can tell I'm confused by it. That's why we have Ryan Theriault joining us on the phone. Ryan, how you doing? Can you hear me?
I'm doing well, John. How are you?
Good. We miss you here in studio today, but don't worry. We are nowhere short of where we should be because we got Greg Booth, the other side of Theriault Booth, and your brother Jeff here in studio. Greg and Jeff, good to chat with you guys.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thanks for having us on again.
Nice to see you.
Yeah, nice to see you too. Okay, so Ryan, we talked last week about kind of the three basic pillars of what people are entitled to. Can you kind of just recap that for people that don't quite understand exactly how workers' comp works?
Absolutely. That's always a perfect place to begin, John. Workers' comp in Illinois, workers' compensation benefits provide three broad categories of benefits, and everything beyond that kind of flows from those three things. Essentially, you're entitled to pay while you're off work, restricted by a doctor for your injuries. Number two, the choice of medical treatment by a doctor of your choosing. And number three, a settlement based on the permanent condition you experience at the end of the claim.
Okay, and that settlement is usually, at some point, adjudicated with lawyers, right?
Well, it has to be. In Illinois, workers' compensation system, in order to present a settlement contract in the commission, in the Workers' Compensation Commission, a lawyer is necessary to be involved. So either the injured worker obtains a lawyer of their choosing, or they have the lawyer for the employer represent both parties.
Okay.
Which isn't typically something we advise.
Yeah, and that's what we talked a little bit about last week, the idea being that when you get to the settlement phase, I'm sure even the best lawyers, if they're working for both sides of the coin, it's a little hard to, you know, fully represent the employee as much as maybe as in a full-throated defense as they should. All right, so now that we've kind of laid the groundwork, I've got some questions of my own, Greg, that I was wondering if you could dive into a little bit, okay?
Sure.
So, if I am injured at work, should I avoid posting anything on social media about that injury? I'm wondering if, you know, someone or the company's attorneys could say, well, your foot hurts, but there you are jet skiing out in Wisconsin this weekend. Is that something people should worry about if they are going to try to file for workers' compensation?
I think it always is. Social media is becoming bigger and bigger, as we know, and people, for whatever reason, like to put personal things on there, or sometimes they don't even know that what they're posting could come back and bite them. But yeah, I think insurance companies are always taking a look at what's going on. Are you, you know, going on vacation, that sort of thing. And so social media is a big thing. And also there's instances where surveillance comes into play as well in these cases where, you know, someone says, hey, I can't lift more than 5 pounds, but they'll send a private investigator out and follow people around and show them lifting cases of water at the grocery store and that sort of thing. So it's always important to make sure that you're doing activities within the restrictions that your doctor has provided to you.
Wow. That sounds like an episode of The Office where I think it's Dwight chases after Daryl, who is trying to claim a workers' compensation case, and things go sour from there. Maybe we should just back up for a second here, and Ryan, maybe you can dive into this. How does the process work? Like, at what point does an investigation begin? Take us through the beginning of this whole process.
Well, the insurance company starts their investigation or the employer immediately after the injury, that they should, to gather that critical information regarding the claim. And in our position is the employer should do that to offer the injured worker the best opportunity for recovery, to make certain that the claim is paid appropriately, to make certain they receive the medical care in a timely manner so that they are given the best outcome potential, not to deny the claim, not to find evidence to say this didn't happen, which is oftentimes the path that they choose to go down. But the reality is it should be the other way. It should be, how can we take care of our injured worker and get them back to a functioning position?
Okay, what happens if they launch an investigation and then they just deny you your claim? Is that the end of the road, Ryan?
No, it happens. A lot of clients come to us in that format. If things are moving along okay at the beginning of the claim and they don't really see a need for legal representation, oftentimes they won't call. A lot of our clients do call and say, my claim has been denied. And it could be denied for 100 different reasons. many of which we later provide evidence that the denial was wrongful in some way. Oftentimes, insurance companies and the claims administrators will attempt to deny the opportunity for the injured worker to have diagnostic imaging, be it a CT scan, ultrasound, or MRI. Because if we deny those sorts of things, the injured worker can never find out what the diagnosis is. And if we can't find out what the diagnosis is, we can't treat the injury, and we just kind of ignore the claim. And a lot of those workers will go back to work and just suffer in silence. And we believe they should have an advocate to make certain they get that medical care they need to get healthy so that they can work for that employer or another employer down the road.
So then, Greg, how does the appeal, like, who are you appealing to? Like, let's say the insurance company denies the claim and you guys step up with a client. You know, we've talked about that this is out of the court system, the standard court system. So is there like a board you're appealing to? Is this part of the normal law that there's a process that plays out?
Well, you have to have an application on file with the commission. So if someone gets hurt at work and they're dealing with an insurance adjuster, there's nobody to appeal to until you file your application for claim at the commission. Once that's done, then an arbitrator is assigned to your case. And the appeal is probably not the right word,
okay.
but a motion in order to get in front of that arbitrator to talk to them about what's going on can be filed. So
you file initially at the beginning of the whole process, or you file after you've been denied?
You can file at any time.
Okay.
Yep. And our preference in terms of handling cases is to file it right away. That way we have an arbitrator assigned to your case. We're representing you. Your case is moving along. Even if there's nothing that's being denied and everything's being paid, that application should be filed so that if something is denied, we can get in front of the arbitrator right away.
Interesting.
And John, that's what to distinguish things. A lot of people say the employer's really taking care of me on this. They're doing everything they need. I don't need a lawyer. I don't want a lawyer, which is great. However, when things go south, it could take us a while to get up to speed to where we need to be.
Mm-hmm.
And the cost of hiring a lawyer is the same whether you hire us day one.
Right.
The last day really is. So,
right.
You know, we would have to get involved in subpoena records and, file these motions and all these petitions and all these type of
right.
things just to get up to speed to help them. So that's why we're like, look, let's work with us now so we can keep you on the right path to get you healthy, get you back to work.
And Therial Booth, you guys represent a lot of first responders. Jeff and I know, as you were a former one, this is near and dear to your heart.
Sure is.
And the employer in that case is the city or municipality. They usually have some lawyers, don't they?
Oh yeah, they do. And, you know, some places are really great,
yeah.
and they really want to help their employees out. But over time, we find a lot of people think their employer's taking sort of an adversarial approach to it, you know, sort of like it's a negative thing. This was a good employee. Now he's just sitting out for no reason. She's should be back to work when it really shouldn't be that way. These are benefits that are offered to the employee, and and our goal is to help that employee get healthy and get back to work, which is what we find 99% of our clients want. They just want to get healthy and come back to work.
Right. This is not people just trying to make some money for some, I mean, I'm sure you do get people like that, but they don't have cases, right? And I'm sure you're able to spot that from a mile away.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan, to the point that I believe Greg made, or maybe it was Jeff, I don't know, one of you guys, you're all making good points. Someone that thinks that the employee is working so well with them and it's going great, first of all, that seems awesome. Does it still help, Ryan, to just check with you guys to make sure that everything is as up and up as an employee thinks it is?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's reasons for that. Number one, this employer may love the employee, and much like we love our own staff. And should they be injured, I'd recommend, you know, that they have somebody guiding them along the way, because the insurance company or the claims administrator or whomever may have a different agenda, different from the employer. So it's imperative, just like anything, you have your accountant check your taxes, you have your insurance person review things on an annual basis, you have your doctor do an annual exam. It's good to have a second set of eyes and say, am I getting the proper care? Do I agree with that path? And am I receiving all the benefits that the Workers' Compensation Act provides to the injured worker?
You bring up a great point. I love my coworkers. I love my boss. Doesn't mean that's the person who's dealing with the workers' comp claim, and doesn't mean that they necessarily have your best interest at heart. Okay, we've just gotten started. More with Ryan, Greg, and Jeff from Therialt Booth. TBfirm.com is where you can go for more information. Give them a call at 630-526-5255. Oh, what are the last four digits of that phone number? You got it handy, Greg?
4242.
Okay, it was missing one number at the end, 4242. Let's say it one more time, 630-526-4242. Got people on the phone line waiting to ask their questions, yours as well, 312-981-7200. We'll do it after the news here at 1:30 on WGN. Ryan Theriault joins us on the phone, Greg Booth, and that's the team of Theriault Booth, and Jeff Theriault. So that's two Theriaults in a booth for you keeping track at home. Make up Theriault Booth, tbfirm.com, and their phone number is 630-526-4242. Get your workers' compensation as a question. The 219 want to know, will this information be recorded and put on our website? Yes. WGNradio.com is where you can re-listen to these conversations. I know sometimes we move fast through a lot of information. That's a great way to go back and listen, and their information will be linked into the story as well. During the break, we had someone call in and say, hey, just a little heads up or a little, you know, thought is if you are an employee and you are going through a workers' comp case, try to keep a positive attitude at work as much as possible. Don't be so antagonistic because something happened, because that could affect how the company maybe reacts to you. And we all kind of nodded along, Greg, right? That makes sense somewhat. I mean, it shouldn't matter, but being at least amicable certainly helps most situations, right?
Yeah, I think that's something important to keep in mind. And oftentimes in workers' compensation, people are released back to work in light duty capacities at some point. And working with your employer and saying, hey, these are my restrictions, this is what I can and can't do, is often very important and a way to avoid conflict in the future. So I think that is sage advice.
Ryan, we talked a couple times, I think the first time you came in, that I think generally, especially here in the Midwest, you get hurt at work and we're just kind of forgiving people, I feel like, and we don't want to, you know, put our bosses out or like be the squeaky wheel. We don't want to be that as much as possible. But Ryan, we're not suing our companies when we get workers' comp. We're not throwing the boss under the bus, right?
No, that's actually correct. Many people sit down in their office and they say, hey, I want to talk to you. I want advice. I want to know my rights are, but I don't want to sue my employer. And our response is always perfect, because you cannot in Illinois.
Right.
The only remedy you have for a work injury at work as to your employer is workers' compensation. And that trade-off was made 100 years ago when workers' compensation laws came into fruition in our state and many other states. This was the deal. And you can't sue your employer. You are not a plaintiff. There is no defendant. More like sometimes we liken it to pushing an insurance claim through on your health insurance and dealing with a medical condition that way. This is just a different mechanism to do so.
Okay.
Hey John, so you know, out of the three of us, we all, you know, enjoy the work comp system and we think it's good for employees, but Ryan loves it. He loves the history of it. He talks about Mesopotamia.
Oh, he talked about it last week on the show.
Oh,
yeah.
And he had way more. He only was back 2,000 years. He has the entire thing, so he loves it. That's the guy for that.
Wow, that's awesome. You sound like the Supreme Court when they send out a brief and they start going back to ye olde England times to explain their ruling. But Ryan goes back even further.
I nodded off.
Yeah.
There's oftentimes we'll put on the old time wigs and just, you know, philosophize about it all.
That's great stuff. Greg, this one's for you. 773. They wanted to know. They just generally thought, I have had a workers' comp claim. I don't think I'm being paid the way I should be. What am I supposed to do, Greg? Whether the employer's just not paying you or they're not paying you the right amount or something squirrely is happening. Can you guys handle that sort of stuff too?
Yeah, that happens all the time.
Why? How does that happen?
Well, because remember, this is an insurance adjuster who's trying to figure out what your average weekly wage is and then what your rate should be for your weekly checks. And it's under the act, it's 2/3 of your average weekly wage. But that number can be calculated 50 different ways. It's not as simple as saying, well, I get paid $20 an hour and I work 40 hours a week. Most people, that's not the case.
I see what you're saying.
They work 38.5 hours a week on average, or they have, you know, vacation days built in, whatever it might be. So figuring out that number is actually somewhat complicated. What we do is we always ask for a wage statement. It's the 52 weeks prior to your injury that they look at. So it doesn't matter how much money you made in 2020 or, you know, how much you made in 2021. It's the 52 weeks right before your injury.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they calculate your average weekly wage, and then they figure out your TTD rate from there. But there's other complicating factors. So what if you have concurrent employment? What if you work full-time here, but you work part-time over there? Those wages come into play.
I know that game.
What if you work overtime?
That's what I was going to say. What happens if you had a great 52 weeks, or conversely, you didn't get as much overtime as you thought you did? How do they calculate that?
They use those 52 weeks, and so we have to look at those. And overtime is tricky as well. We need to figure out if it's mandatory or not, if it's regularly worked. So all those things can come into play to say, hey, the insurance company is paying you at this rate, but we actually think it's much higher. And if that's the case, then we need to recalculate that. And same thing with part-time employment. Your wages are going to be a lot lower if you're only working 20 hours a week, presumably. So there are minimums as well in TTD. So some people may only make $200 a week.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that might be the rate that they have to pay you. It's not two-thirds of that rate. So there's
a lot of complicating things.
Exactly.
But they can give you guys a call, and you guys could at least talk through it with someone,
I mean,
right?
We want to figure out what your wages are. We want to look at some of your paychecks. We want to get that wage statement, and then we can figure out what that number should be.
And it may not be malicious. It may just be it's complicated, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's there, like I said, there's a variety of factors and many different ways to calculate that. So it's definitely something to take into account.
Jeff, I love when you're passing notes over here to Greg, by the way.
Yeah.
What do you want to cover, Jeff?
No, something that we get a lot of times, too, is that when there's a second job involved.
Uh-huh, yeah.
There could be calculations for that as well. They could recover for that as well. Something that people don't think about. I work during the day as a mechanic, at night as a bartender, and that they can't do either because of the injury at the shop. That second job could be recovered as well.
Wait, really? It's not only just the mechanic? That job, you can get it for the other jobs you had too?
Yeah, that's that concurrent employment where you have a full-time job at Walmart, but then at night you work part-time mm-hmm. at Target.
So many people do this, yeah.
Those wages for both jobs are considered your average weekly wage. And so the insurance for your first employer may only be using those wages because they don't have the wages from the other employer.
I don't think maybe a lot of people even know that they would be entitled to the other. So just from a technical standpoint, who's paying for that second company's wages? Does the insurance company go to Target and say, now you have to pay because of the injury at Walmart? Or is it Walmart paying for all of it?
The insurance carrier for where you got injured is covering all of it.
Mm.
So it's the petitioner's responsibility to get those wages to the insurance company to say, hey, wait a second, I also make this money over here, and we need to include that.
Ryan, I have a very basic question, okay? So
perfect.
It's not always so black and white, like if you're injured, you stop going to work, you make two-thirds pay until you're completely healed. Or is it? Or is there like, I think you guys alluded to this, the idea of, well, maybe you can come back to work and do an adjusted sort of job that takes the load off of your foot if that was what was injured or something. How do you navigate something like that, Ryan?
You're entitled to pay while you're off work and restricted by a doctor, number one. And we say both of those things have to be in place. You have to be off work and restricted. So you can't simply be off work but not restricted by your doctor with physical restrictions. And you can't be restricted but going to work. All those things have to be in place. And if they're not in place, we encourage each client, every time they go to the doctor, to discuss. If it's a shoulder injury, what can I do? Can I use my other arm? Can I use my legs? Can I use my words? Can I do any aspect of my job? Work with the employer. Can you provide some benefit to the employer while you're injured in a light-duty setting? Unfortunately, a lot of times the employer can't accommodate that or chooses not to for whatever reason. And that's the situation then when you're provided payment when you're unable to be accommodated with your restrictions.
Wait, so then if they can accommodate, is this done through ADA, like the American Disabilities Act? Like if they can accommodate, then you're just going to get, there's no workers' comp claim, you're just kind of doing the job, you're just doing it a little differently for the same pay?
No, the ADA, there's aspects of all sorts of laws that interact here, but it's really just simply, if I have a shoulder injury and it's my non-dominant arm, let's say, and I can do my work with my dominant arm, can you do your job? And if so, we're still going to pay your medical bills. We're still going to provide you with compensation for your permanent injury. But for the period you're actually able to work, you're not going to get your work pay and the pay that you would be entitled to if you were restricted. That's
I see. Okay, that makes sense to me. Okay, way to answer that one. Wasn't so black and white. Easier and easy after all. Tell you what, we got to take a break. 312-981-7200. I see some questions on the text lines about shift differential, stuff like that. Is that included as well? Let's get legal powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. We got the folks from Theriault Booth on here. We got 5 minutes here. It's going to be rapid fire. Greg, if a claim is denied, you wanted to kind of walk through that again. You really need a lawyer in that situation for workers' comp.
Yes, because the only way you're going to get some answers and move things forward is to get in front of an arbitrator. So you have to have your case filed. You need to file a what's called a petition for immediate hearing. It's just a motion to say, we really need to talk to this arbitrator now. And that process is oftentimes not as quick as it sounds. It can take months to get in front of the arbitrator. Oftentimes we need to get depositions of doctors and their opinions before we can even get to hearing. So
if you aren't working during that time and you're waiting for the arbitrator to rule, do you get back pay back to the start of the injury?
You can. It depends on when that case goes to hearing. And if you haven't been getting paid as part of that hearing, you're asking for those back benefits to be awarded as well.
And a question for the 847 referring to that 52 weeks prior to the injury as the basis for which pay is determined, how much you're going to ultimately get, two-thirds of that or whatever. Is shift differential included, the 847 wants to know?
It can be. We would need to take a look at all of that and see when those are provided, if it's something that is elective versus mandatory. So those calculations are fairly complicated, but you do need to look at those 52 weeks and see when those hours were worked.
Okay, let's go to the phone lines. Rob is on WGN. Rob, you're going through something with your wife, huh? I mean, for workers' comp. Sorry.
Yeah, my wife recently, this past summer, got injured at work, and she collected workers' compensation, was off for a couple, 3 months, and was got regular checks and no problems. She's back to work. But my question is, if there are complications, she had surgery. If there are complications, does she have, can she go back to that insurance company and say, hey, you know, she needs to see the doctor again, does she need to settle this case, receive a settlement? Should we see?
Rob just dropped for us. But Ryan, I think you kind of got where he was going. Obviously, you don't know the specifics of the case, but generally speaking, if there's further adjustments or things that happen, even after someone goes through work and already got workers' comp, Ryan, what happens next?
If they settle the claim, they can no longer go back to the medical well, and the claim is over typically. The attorney that handles the settlement, which is the way 99% of these cases would go down, would see what would be necessary for future medical concerns. Do we need to create a pool of money for that? Is that a likely scenario? If re-injury is a whole other thing and maybe subject to another whole claim, but do we need to allocate any monies in the settlement for future medical, or can we settle it based on the permanent condition the person's experiencing and provide them the compensation for what they might experience in the future? So it is always fact-specific, but yes, it's an absolute concern that we need to take into consideration when you settle a workers' compensation claim.
But once you settle it, that's the end of it.
If it's settled, very typically, there are a few exceptions, of course, that as to anything. But very typically, you're done with medical treatment.
That's a lawyer's answer. There's a couple.
It depends.
No, that's a good point to bring up. So if it's a complicated case and there needs to be further analysis done in the future, it can be written into the settlement to perhaps revisit it later. Okay, 219 wants to know, Greg, this is for you. I'm completely injured in a fall, broken bones. I'm sorry to hear that, 219. After 6 months, my employer said there's no way for me to come back in any light duty scenario and let me go. I now have to undergo more surgery, have lost my family insurance. Is this legal? Now, this person's in Indiana, which I know you guys don't do work in. I'm sure if they called you, you guys could recommend someone in Indiana, perhaps. Generally speaking, though, does that sound like a legal scenario? I mean, with the base, just the little basic facts we know?
I mean, as far as what's going on with his work comp case, it sounds like treatment's ongoing, it's getting paid, and he may need some future treatment. That's all fine. As far as the health insurance, it's getting a little outside of the work comp realm, but if you're no longer working there, they're also not going to be providing you with health insurance. So the issue in that scenario is, what can we do to help you in terms of is this a sort of a loss of trade that's brought you out of the workplace? Is there a wage differential scenario where you no longer can make what you used to make? It gets pretty complicated in terms of what some of those available remedies are for you under the Act, but certainly something that you would want to consult with an attorney about.
All right, 219. Call 630-526-4242. Theriault Booth practices here in Illinois, but maybe they'll be able to help you out with someone in Indiana. All right, that's all the time we have. This flew by. We got to end this show early because we got Northwestern football. Ryan, Greg, Jeff, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
All right, Theriault Booth, tbfirm.com. Shout out to Mary Ellen, by the way, who's here as well throughout the day. 630-526-4242.